Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we take another look at Pacific Gas and Electric Company. We feature authors and researchers Peter Phillips and Tim Ogburn. They just completed an article called PG&E Monopoly Controlled by the 1%, A Perfect Storm of Environmental Destruction and the Transfer of Public Utility Wealth from California's 99% to the Global Rich. Today on the Project Censored Show, we'll hear from our guests about PG&E's monopoly power and disasters by the rich 1%. Stay with us.
Created by the criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise, another guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we take another deep look at Pacific Gas and Electric, that's PG&E. PG&E's monopoly controlled by the 1%. It's a perfect storm of environmental destruction and the transfer of public utility wealth from California's 99% to the global rich. Of course, this is also the title of a recent study and an accompanying op-ed, PG&E Monopoly Power and Disasters by the Rich 1%, written by Peter Phillips and Tim Ogburn. Of course, listeners to the Project Censored Show are no stranger to Peter Phillips, who co-founded this program. Peter Phillips is the political sociologist at Sonoma State University. He is the author most recently of Giants, the Global Power Elite, out of Seven Stories Press from 2018. He is the former director of Project Censored and previous president of the Media Freedom Foundation. He did 14 censored yearbooks between 1997 and 2011. He is co-author also with Dennis Liu of Impeach the President, Seven Stories Press from 2007. Also the winner of the Dallas Smythe Award from the Union for Democratic Communications. Peter Phillips, welcome back to your show.
It's great to be back, Mickey. I'm glad to be here.
Yes. And you are bringing with you today, Peter, by phone, Tim Ogburn joins us. Tim was your partner in research on this really timely and important study on PG&E's monopoly control by the 1%. Tim Ogburn is a 20-year manager for the California EPA. He is founder and co-chair of the Environmental Industry Coalition of the United States in Washington, D.C. He's published in numerous technical and trade journals regarding public-private partnerships. The International Environment Technology Consultant in India, Philippines, Malaysia, Thailand, Egypt, and Israel. Tim Ogburn also is a consultant to USAID, U.S. Department of Commerce, U.S. State Department, and has given presentations on the environmental technology industry before Congress. Tim Ogburn, welcome to the Project Censored Show.
Well, thank you, Mickey. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Tim, you and Peter have put together a really timely study and a really important one. Late last year, we had Peter Byrne and Will Carruthers on, investigative reporters that have been doing a lot of dirt digging on PG&E and what they've got going on in Northern California, their culpability for the fires, their connection to the 1%, Darius Anderson, ownership of the Press Democrat paper. Here we have another angle where, based on some of the ideas that Peter Phillips put forward in Giants, the Global Power Elite, you all have put that lens, that microscope, you've put that on the PG&E board, and you've really looked at PG&E behavior from these fires. So Tim Ogburn, let's start with you and a little bit of the backdrop of what motivated you to do this study with Peter Phillips.
The purpose of this paper is really a call to action. We want to show how the current board of directors in the operational structure of PG&E allows for enormous profits and bonuses at the expense of safe, reliable delivery of electricity to the general public. The article doesn't completely solve the issue, but what it does, it creates the starting point for a solution. And it really kind of starts with a question. It begs the question, is the financial structure of an investor-owned public utility a conflict of interest relative to delivering safe, reliable electricity to the public? In other words, what is the priority of an investor-owned public utility? Is it profits? Or is it serving the public? And personally, there are two reasons or two things that happened in the last couple of months besides my electricity being turned off and rates going up and such. I went into a dentist's office, and this was just a couple of days after one of the public safety power shutoffs. And long story short, the dentist hygienist was telling me the first day after a three-day shutoff of electricity, they had four people come in with broken teeth and broken jaws. The second day, they had five people come in with broken teeth and broken jaws and so on. These are some of the untold stories of these public safety power shutoffs. And another thing happened. I was in the doctor's office. I'm sitting there. The guy next to me started talking to him. He had just moved to the Nevada City area from another state. He was a lineman for a utility company in that state. And when he's told me, when he moved to Nevada County and he saw the lines, the PG&E electrical lines, he was appalled. He said if his lines looked like that, he would have been fired. And so those kinds of personal stories was the impetus for me to work with Peter to write this story.
So Tim Ogburn, just very quickly, for the listeners that don't know, we're all across the country. We're talking about the San Francisco Bay Area, Northern California. Nevada City is a couple hours north. It's actually an hour or so north from Sacramento. So we're talking North Central California for those folks that aren't in California. But of course, PG&E is a massive corporation, energy provider, purportedly. And you mentioned a minute ago about people with broken teeth and stuff. So what was that about? Why were there people with broken teeth again?
Because they tripped and they fell when the lights were out.
Wow.
They didn't have electricity. And these for the most part were elderly senior citizens that were injured. You don't hear about that.
The impetus then is you definitely have an interest in figuring out, you know, and you're hearing some interesting stories about the condition of the lines from other people. And so this made you want to take a look at that bigger question, right? Whether or not are these folks in the business of providing power or are they just pocketing money and letting the system fall apart?
That's right. Exactly.
So Peter Phillips, you maybe jump in here.
We had to evacuate our home. And we end up sleeping on Mickey's couch for a couple of nights because you had power and we didn't. But not only that, but we were forced to evacuate because of the Kincaid fire, which threatened the entire west side of Sonoma County. So we were directly, personally impacted, and it was significant. And so I started thinking about, like, okay, what's going on here? What's really happening? Because there's been a number of massive fires in California, started by PG&E. And PG&E is this monopoly of gas and electric covering most of California. Most of northern and central California is PG&E territory. They control power to over 5 million families. And what's interesting is because those families, they have to pay to get electric. There's only really one source. And so it's a monopoly control. And so we pay, in terms of power costs, some of the highest rates in the United States. And there's a guaranteed return. The California Public Utilities Commission allows PG&E an 8 to 11% return on their investment. So over a 10-year period or so, that, you know, they're putting away, paying their investors billions of dollars a year of our money and not doing the safety procedures that are needed to maintain the system. So we are getting, on average, one fire a day. There was over 400 fires last year, PG&E caused. And studies show that literally two-thirds of their lines are unsafe.
Tim Ogburn, back to you here. PG&E is the largest privately held public utility in the United States, you write in this recent report. A total of 91% of PG&E stocks are held by major capital investment management firms. And I know we're going to get into that, BlackRock, Vanguard. But before we get more into the finances, Tim, maybe you can talk about the history of some of these problems and California fires. You all go into this in the article a bit, and there's some really fascinating history to some of this, including going all the way back to Ken Lay, Kenny Boy, as President George W. Bush would call him before he pretended like he never met him, the chief executive of the failed energy company Enron, sort of a front company.
Yes, right.
Maybe tell us a little bit about that, Tim.
PG&E's transformation from a public utility to a privately owned utility began about 30 years ago when Ken Lay, he was the chief executive of Enron, And he convinced California to lead the nation in deregulating its power markets. Now, until then, utilities had highly detailed budgets for operations and maintenance. And these were approved by state regulators, and they had to spend the money as in the budget. For example, they had specific line items for maintenance and operations. Now, if they failed to use that money as promised, regulators had the opportunity to fine the utilities. Well, then the transformation from public to privately owned utilities happened. And what happened there was, back in the day when you paid your utility bill, part of the bill was earmarked for maintenance. Well, that changed. That was then, this is now. Now your utility bill includes a similar revenue component, but now that revenue component is what they call unassigned revenue. Now, the problem with unassigned revenue is it can be used for anything. In other words, it doesn't have to be used for maintenance. It should, but it's not. A good part of that unassigned revenue is now used for bonuses. It's used for paying investors. And then the question again becomes, is this an expense of delivering safe and reliable electricity? The money that I used to pay in my utility bill 30 years ago that was earmarked for maintenance now doesn't have to be used for maintenance. And for some reason, that seems to be okay. PG&E is getting away with that. And again, we're hoping that the readers of our study will take a look at this and try to do something about it. And we offer solutions. At the end of the study, we talk about some of the utility companies that have become publicly owned that were previously privately owned. In many cases, their rates have gone down, and they're much more effective in how they deliver electricity to their customers.
There's talk now, a lot more talk, and not just tough talk for theater from Governor Gavin Newsom, who claims he's eventually going to do something about PG&E. And Peter, how much did they give Newsom in the last year?
In 18, they gave him $200,000 for his campaign.
Yeah, so we'll be waiting for that to happen. But meanwhile, Tim Ogburn, San Jose, San Francisco, several cities in the Bay Area have been talking more about public power and really going after PG&E, who actually, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, they owe more than they're technically worth in terms of asset holdings in their bankruptcy problem. Is that correct?
They've cost over $50 billion in damages from the fires.
Yeah, that's extraordinary.
That's my understanding.
And there's 5.2 million shares are worth 10 bucks each, so... they don't have enough resources to pay off the $50 billion.
No. Yeah,
they're trying to get taxpayers to do it.
They're upside down, basically.
Yeah, and so if taxpayers are getting involved, do you think that the taxpayers should be the ones sitting on these boards and the one making the decisions, not the 1%?
Absolutely. I mean, take a look at Sacramento Municipal Utility District, SMUD. Their rates are 30% less than PG&E's rates, but their board of directors, okay, are the general public. They're not investors. There are many utility companies that have boards of directors that consist of not worldwide investors, but the people who are served by the utility. And those utility companies, for the most part, are very effective. They don't have the same kinds of issues with fires, and their rates are lower than PG&E's rates.
Right. And so this is certainly something that's come up in a few previous shows where we were talking about PG&E. Here it is again, corroborated. I'd like to remind listeners, you're tuned to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's show, I'm joined by Peter Phillips, political sociologist and author of Giants, the Global Power Elite, also co-founder and former host of this program with me. And we're also joined by his associate, Tim Ogburn. He's a 20-year manager for California EPA, founder and co-chair of the Environmental Industry Coalition of the United States in Washington, D.C., longtime environmental technology consultant, including to many branches and many agencies at the federal government. Peter Phillips and Tim Ogburn, again, are authors of this new study, PG&E Monopoly Controlled by the 1%, A Perfect Storm of Environmental Destruction and the Transfer of Public Utility Wealth from California's 99% to the Global Rich. You can find that study and the accompanying op-ed piece at projectcensored.org. After this musical break, we'll continue our conversation about this study with Peter Phillips and Tim Ogburn. Stay with us. Thank you. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we look at PG&E, Monopoly Power and Disasters by the Rich 1%. Peter Phillips and Tim Ogburn are our guests today. They have recently done this study. And before the break, we were talking about public versus private power, and we were talking about some of the troubled and problematic history for PG&E. And now let's dive a little more deeply into some of the specifics of what you found out in your study. We definitely are going to be getting into the issue of global capital. And I know, Peter, that's one of your bailiwicks. One of you, Tim or Peter, could you remind our listeners of the previous few years' worth of fires in terms of their collective damage, the trauma? Earlier on, we got a little glimpse of that with personal stories. Tim, you had some powerful stories. Peter, of course, your story, very close and personal and local to us here in Northern California, too. But this is, of course, a much bigger global issue. This isn't just a California story or Northern California story. Australia is on fire. Climate change is a big issue. These fires are the new normal. So Peter or Tim, either one of you, maybe jump in and talk a little bit about the extent of the damage we're talking about.
Well, 2017 was the big fires here in Northern California. That in Santa Rosa, they destroyed 5,000 homes and displaced thousands of people. It was massive damage, all caused by PG&E fires. 22 people died. Over $17 billion of damage occurred. And there were multiple fires, the Tubbs Fire, the Nuns Fire, the Adobe Fire. All of those happened. A total of 250,000 acres were burned. That was quite traumatic, and they were pretty upset. The board realized that they were going to have to pay out billions of dollars in lawsuits and damages. But then a year later, of course, the Camp Fire up in Chico area destroyed the town of Paradise, caused $16 billion in damage, and 18,000 homes and businesses were destroyed. 86 people died.
The other part of that, too, is PG&E crews had a chance to do something about that fire before it happened. There was a tower that broke that caused the fire. The crews had not climbed up that tower to look at it, to see and to maintain that tower since 2001. And that's in violation of the company's own rules requiring that towers with recurring problems be inspected annually. These are the kinds of things that are happening causing these fires. I mean, like Peter was saying, this fire killed 86 people. 18,000 homes were burned. And I have some relatives who lost 3 homes in Paradise. And when that fire was happening, we didn't know if they were alive or not. And it was so scary. But as it turned out, they survived. But their lives have been turned upside down. And this probably did not have to happen.
And we, from our study, clearly show the PG&E studies that show that they've neglected their lines. They're not engaging in proper safety procedures. They're not following up on reports where their lines are weak or their gas provisions are faulty. I mean, they blew up a major part of San Bruno in 2010, destroyed 38 houses, killed 8 people. So they were faced with 30-some billion dollars in damages. So they filed bankruptcy a year ago, which protects them from their creditors taking assets. And at the same time, when a board of directors is in charge of the company files bankruptcy, there's pressures from the stockholders to resign. So almost all of the board except 2 a year ago resigned from the board. And some of them were starting to be named in lawsuits and stuff like that, so they bailed. So there's 14 new board members that were put in, and they took a very aggressive action with terms of shutting off the power. Over 3 million people had their power shut off last year. Nonetheless, they still started a fire. There was the Kincade Fire in Sonoma County because they left their high power lines on, and one of those defaulted and started a fire here in 2019. That destroyed 77,000 acres, 300 structures, and forced 100,000 people to evacuate West County of Sonoma County. So that was another major fire. So we have this new boards of directors. We started to look at that. Well, who are these people? And what we found was that they're primarily, there's 14 of them, that they're primarily representing major capital investment management companies. Right down the line, each one. They're all multimillionaires. They're all one percenters. They all went to elite universities. And they're the ones in charge of PG&E now, trying to get the bankruptcy courts to allow them to dismiss paying the damages that have happened.
10 of the new board directors have direct links to capital investment management firms. All 14 of the board members are in the upper level of the 1% of the richest in the world. They're millionaires from elite universities.
And these people are handpicked to protect that stock on behalf of their owners and not working on behalf of the customers for PG&E.
Tim Ogburn, you and Peter Phillips write in the study. Again, the study can be found right online, the front page at projectcensored.org. We're featuring it on the front page. You can read it for free there and follow along. You wrote, after PG&E's bankruptcy filing, a new board of directors was constituted to impress on the public the idea that a new safety-oriented age was emerging at PG&E. However, the new board members look very much like the former members in a variety of ways, right? It's another version of meet the new boss, same as the old boss. So maybe we should go through some of these folks. Peter, as part of your book, Giants, the Global Power Elite, you go through and list in several chapters who these people are that are involved in global capital. And in this case, you and Tim Ogburn go through and look at the new PG&E 2019 board of directors. So just to give our listeners an opportunity to hear, who exactly are these people on the board and what is informing their decisions, right? When you go through and read this and you look at who these people are, where they're from, what their networks are, what they're worth, what they're invested in, it suddenly becomes very clear that they're not interested in what the public wants. And in fact, they are there to protect an investment. They're there to protect assets rather than public safety. Right. So, Tim, you and Peter, do you want to go through any of these and talk a little bit about these?
Before we do that, yes. I mean, Peter can handle this part, but I just want to make sure everybody knows that the 2018 board members, they collect between $250,000 and $330,000 in annual compensation. Now, the new board of directors, if it's approved by the bankruptcy court, they're going to increase their annual compensation to $400,000 a year. So given the financial situation of PG&E, the fact that they're trying to retain a $130 million bonus program for employees, they're still increasing the annual compensation of the board member. It went from 250 to 330 to 400,000.
400,000?
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, that's the salary of the president of the United States.
That's correct.
Not that the president needs that salary, certainly not this one. But again, that's pretty riveting that at a time when they're in bankruptcy, at a time when they're cutting back on safety, they still see fit to boost the 14 board members.
It's very telling.
The corporate media isn't interested in these stories, and we know why the word corporate is there. But these are the kind of stories that we really need to hear. And of course, the Press Democrat isn't going to report a lot of those because the owner of the Press Democrat is in with the PG&E lobbying groups and started a bogus front here, basically, you know, to try to clean up after the fires that had been outed. That was part of the previous studies that we aired on the program. But yeah, Tim, I'm glad you brought that up. That's one of those powerful points that really hits home. It really tells you who these folks are and what their interests are. They're not interested in us. They're not interested in providing safe power, clean power, renewable power. They're interested in solidifying their own power.
And of the of the 14 new board members, most of them, there's only three that live in the PG&E service area. There's some in Texas, there's some in New England, there's some in the Midwest. They're not Californians.
They don't even live here.
And they're all tied into capital investment companies, the giants.
So to claim that it has anything to do with community and safety is just, on the face of it, just absurd.
They're there. They've got their lawyers. Absolutely. They're trying to get through bankruptcy. They're representing BlackRock and Vanguard and these giant capital investment companies. When PG&E, the stock used to be worth $70, and there's 5.2 million shares of stock out there. So there was a lot of money, and there was a lot of capital coming back because they had monopoly control. They had guaranteed $16 billion a year in income.
I can't not pay the PG&E bill.
No, if you don't, they'll cut off your power, which they do to over a 250,000 people every year. 5% of their people.
Which certainly detrimentally impacts people in lower income and who just don't have the ability to keep up.
Yeah, it's eat or pay your power bill kind of
thing. Which is incredibly exploitative, and that kind of for-profit model for things like alleged public utility is a real kind of smack in the face. It's really a destruction of any sense of having a public trust.
That was one of the other things I forgot to mention in the beginning when I started talking with Peter about doing this article, was just the whole idea of the violation of the public trust. It's a government monopoly that PG&E has. All these utility companies have monopolies. In that monopoly, to me, what's implied is a public trust. And the public trust is that they're to provide a reasonable service and safe service, not killing people, not destroying communities, not destroying families. And that public trust, as far as I'm concerned, has been absolutely violated. When you take a look at the fact that they've diverted money earmarked for maintenance to profits, how is that a public trust? How can you trust a company that does that? How can you trust a company that has a new board of directors that where they even more the board of directors now are directly related to these very large institutional investment firms and at the same time asking or probably getting an increase in their annual compensation? And they don't even live. Most of them don't even live in California.
Yeah, again, pretty. Peter, go. Do you want to jump in here, Peter?
Well, I think we can look at a few of these people very specifically.
Well, let's get into that after the break because we're going to have to cut out for another break here, and then we can dive in and see exactly who are these people, who do they work for, what are their interests. I'm speaking with Peter Phillips and Tim Ogburn, who are authors of a recent study. It was an original study done and posted at Project Censored on PG&E's monopoly power and disasters by the rich 1%. Peter Phillips and Tim Ogburn write that between 2006 and the end of 2017, PG&E made $13.5 billion in net profits. Over those years, they paid nearly $10 billion in dividends to shareholders, but had little money to maintain safety on their electricity lines. Drought, Peter Phillips and Tim Ogburn write, turned PG&E's service area into a tinderbox at the same time money was diverted from maintenance to investor profits. And a 2013 Liberty Consulting report showed, and this is in the report, 60% of PG&E's power lines were at risk of failure due to obsolete equipment. 75% of the lines lacked in-line grounding. And between 2008 and 15, the California Public Utility Commission found that PG&E was late on thousands of repair violations. And a 2012 report further revealed PG&E illegally diverted $100 million from safety to executive compensation and bonuses over a 15-year period. This is the track record and the pattern of, if corporations are people, this is certainly a sociopathic example of one. So we're going to come back after this musical break, and we're going to get into the weeds here, or as Peter Phillips likes to say in his book, Giants, Forest for the Trees, right? So we're going to get in and see who some of these folks are and what their interests are and why this is happening in Northern California, but not just here, right? We see these patterns replicated. So we will return to the Project Censored Show to talk about PG&E's monopoly control for the 1% after this musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we're looking at PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, a monopoly controlled by the 1%. It is the perfect storm of environmental destruction and the transfer of public utility wealth from California's 99% to the global rich. This is a new study published late January for projectcensored.org. You can read the study for free online at projectcensored.org. There's an accompanying op-ed with it on PG&E's Monopoly Power and Disasters by the Rich 1%, also right on the front page of projectcensored.org. You can read it free by going to the website. And today, for the hour, we have the pleasure of being joined by the two authors of this study, researchers of this study. Tim Ogburn is a 20-year manager for the California EPA, founder and co-chair of the Environmental Industry Coalition of the United States in Washington, D.C., author of many technical and trade journal articles and so forth. He's a longtime environmental technology consultant, has testified before Congress, consultant for many government agencies, Department of Commerce, U.S. State Department, and so forth. Peter Phillips, co-author here of the study, political sociologist from Sonoma State University, former director of Project Censored, co-founder of this program back in 2010. He's author most recently, again, of Giants, the Global Power Elite. And of course, that's where we're going to start the second half of the show. We're going to talk about who are the global power elite here at PG&E. We've been talking about this newly constructed board. You got 14 board members. So Peter Phillips, Tim Ogburn, let's start going down the list. Who exactly are these people and what is informing their decisions, Peter?
Well, I think we need to clarify here, too. When we say 91% of the PG&E stock is controlled by capital investment management companies, Vanguard and BlackRock being the two largest. They each hold close to 10%, so they got like 20% of the stock for PG&E. And they want to see the stock value go back up. They want to continue to have that 8 to 11% return. It's perfect for them that they have that kind of control over a guaranteed $16 billion a year in electric bills that everybody in the area is paying. So they want to keep control. They definitely want to do that. So their entire board of directors, they mostly all resigned. And so the trustees, of course, are handpicked by these big investment companies. And so we got a new CEO last year. William Johnson was the former CEO of the TVA, Tennessee Valley Authority, which is a government-run electric company in Tennessee.
Yeah, going back to the New Deal.
Exactly. They brought him in at a $2.5 million salary. They gave him $3.5 million equity award, and then they gave him $3 million more just to move from Tennessee to California. So he has several million that he's getting to run PG&E. And then the new boards of directors, Jeffrey Bleach, he was former ambassador to Australia. He was a special counsel to Obama. He's on a number of different boards and a big-time lawyer.
Council on Foreign Relations, World Affairs, yes. Council, American Security Project. Oh, a CSU trustee, got to get into higher education. He was
Meredy Moore. And she's kind of typical because she's from San Francisco, so they had to get some people from the service area on. But she's also the CEO and chief investment officer of a $2 billion asset management company. But more specifically, she's on the board of directors of BlackRock, the largest capital investment company in the world with $7 trillion worth of capital. She's on the PG&E board. The former senior portfolio manager from Canyon Partners, Dominic Millie, $20 billion capital investment company. So these people are multimillionaires. They control huge amounts of capital just directly. And then they're on the board of directors or appointed to the board of directors of PG&E, and they want to be self-perpetuated so that there's no government involvement here. The PG&E board gets to be literally the board that the owners and the investors hand select. So their job is to bring the stock value up, protect PG&E under the bankruptcy court, and continue to turn off the power when we need it. They're saying that's going to happen for 10 years, which really got me irritated that we could face week-long periods of time where our power was turned off. That's why I started to look at this and say, well, wait a minute. You know, we don't want that. Make these lines safe. Let's not have that problem occur where millions of people are losing their power.
Tim Ogburn, does it appear to be the case that had PG&E sunk that money, not just back into the system in terms of upgrades and repairs, but actually sunk it more into renewables? Doesn't that seem to be the way to go to you? I mean, you know, this is an area about which you are expert in terms of environmental impact and these kind of things. What is your thinking?
Absolutely. Not only is it good for the environment, but it's also good for business, because when they invest in renewables successfully, they actually lower the cost to the ratepayer. There's been a number of companies that are publicly owned, not privately owned, that are investing their profits back into the company, primarily in renewables. Silicon Valley has done that. There's a company in Florida that does that, a utility company. So absolutely, it's our future. And again, it's good for the environment. It's good business. But you're just not seeing that with PG&E. Not at all. It's quite the contrary. It's just not happening. And the other thing, too, about the board is one of the reasons why you don't see these kinds of policies where, for example, focusing on renewables, is there's no ratepayers on the board. No members of the general public are on the board. So you don't have that balance.
There's no perspective. I mean, you look at who these people are and how you outline these people. Senior fellow at the World Resources Institute, crown fellow at the Aspen Institute, that's John Woolard. CEO Meridian Energy, New Zealand. I'm mentioning John because it says Alameda, San Francisco area. So even a couple of the people that are vice president of energy at Google. These people are so far removed from the general public, it's obscene. So, you know, Tim, is there even any pretense of getting public input on these things at meetings and so forth?
In a word, no. We didn't come across any evidence in our research that that's happening, Mickey. We just didn't find it at all.
There were fights between some of the stockholder groups as to who would be on the board, and some of the bondholders were threatening to sue to protect their bond investments. And the governor's been involved in negotiations around this. The Public Utilities Commission is appointed by the governor and approved, but these are still elite appointments, not democratically. And PG&E is trying to get out of their $50 billion damage debt, and they're offering $13 billion. So they're like they're offering $1 on five, and the hopes that the state of California will bail them out on the rest. So part of your PG&E bill now is $2.50 to go to a investment fund for reimbursement on fires and damages. So they're getting us to pay for it again.
And you've both been following Governor Gavin Newsom and things coming out of Sacramento. So Tim Ogburn, I guess first you, then Peter. The governor has made noise. I would suggest that it's akin to political theater, given the history. But let's put that aside momentarily. Do you think that there is any likelihood, given the groundswell of anger in the voters about what's happened here, do you think there's any chance that Gavin Newsom will do anything? And if so, what might he do?
Well, again, that's one of the reasons why we wrote this article, is a call to action. Hopefully we can get some people excited about this so something will happen. The way it is right now, nothing's going to change. You have a lot of talk, but you don't have a lot of action. And until we get people to act, nothing's going to change. I don't see a change, Mickey. I just don't see it right now.
It does seem like PG&E isn't just fanning him with money for fun. They're hopeful that they can curry some favors with whomever is in office. Peter.
We basically conclude, and a number of researchers have concluded, there's no way to solve this problem without democratic control of PG&E. It's a public utility. It needs to be publicly owned and controlled. The conflict of interest between investors and investors taking that 8 or 9% per year and wanting to maintain that is unresolvable. There needs to be a real movement to make PG&E controlled by the state of California on the behalf of the people in the state of California. That is very doable. In fact, the governor has a committee looking at about how to do it as a threat to the board that they have to solve some of these issues. That's not happening. This 1% board, the richest people in the country, they are not interested in giving up their 5.25 million shares with the potential of going back to values at $50 to $70. But right now, they've got to pay off. They want the government, they want the taxpayers to pay off their debt and their damages on what's happened. There's records of that. I mean, certainly the pharmaceutical companies have the federal government insuring and paying off the damages they do. I would think the PG&E wants to have the state government pay off the damages that they do through neglect and improper maintenance of their systems, and still pay themselves that $400,000 a year to be on the board, millions of dollars for the executives, and bonuses on top of that. So that doesn't sound proper to us, which was one of the reasons we wrote this. And we want to see people become concerned about that, start telling the governor, no, we want a public PG&E.
I'm speaking with Peter Phillips and Tim Ogburn. They are authors and researchers of a recent study. The study is PG&E Monopoly Controlled by the 1%, a perfect storm of environmental destruction and the transfer of public utility wealth from California's 99% to the global rich. This was published January 21, 2020 at projectcensored.org. You can go to the website and read their study for free at projectcensored.org. Just a reminder, this is the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. After our musical break, we will conclude with our final section for today's program and maybe talk more about some of these solutions and some other things that we can all be doing. So please stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. Today, we've been talking about PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, Monopoly Power and Disasters by the Rich 1%. That's an article written by Tim Ogburn and Peter Phillips. We've been speaking with Peter and Tim for the hour today. The op-ed, of course, goes with an accompanying study that they did. It's a 5,000-word study. It's a chapter-length article, folks. PG&E Monopoly Controlled by the 1%. It's a perfect storm of environmental destruction and the transfer of public utility wealth from California's 99% to the global rich. In other words, the ratepayers, right, are going to have to bail out the corporation here. Before the break, we were talking about some people on the board. We were talking about some things that could be and definitely needed to be done. Certainly that included shifts in the political landscape. Just so readers know, Tim Ogburn and Peter Phillips also went and listed previous members of people on the board. They didn't just look at the new members. You know, they looked at the old members, right? And that's part of that meet the new boss, same as the old boss problem, right? We take a look at the consistency and the control of global capital here. So I want you to know that there's a lot to be seen in this article. And while we're certainly hitting a lot of the main points here, there's a lot more detail in the article. And we certainly want you to have all that information because Tim Ogburn, maybe we'll start with you. You're up a little north country in Nevada City area, Grass Valley, Nevada City. It's really fire prone. The whole town of Paradise burned to the ground up by Chico. This is a real threat to people. This is a very real existential threat. And so, Tim, you said earlier that you honestly didn't see any changes coming. So, pardon the expression of fiddling while Rome burns and fiddling while lots of things are burning. Let's get to this issue of where do you think we can be applying pressure in the public? What do you think are things we can be doing? Anything from getting off the grid to renewables, political movements? You've been around a long time in political movements, and you've certainly been involved with environmental issues, and you've got a lot of expertise in this. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the first thing is for the general public to understand that there are solutions, but they have to act. They have to act as a group, not individually. I've talked to a lot of people, and they say, "Where do I go? What do? Who do I talk to? How can we solve this problem?" They don't really know where to go. In the meantime, there are some groups that are starting up now that I'm hearing about that are beginning to put pressure on the governor to try to look for various solutions. There are examples of solutions throughout the state and throughout the United States that people are now looking to see, can we do that here? I know up here in Nevada City, there was a meeting with the general public, and they got together and they were looking at whether or not the local water district could take over a utility or to build a utility for the county itself. And they're not sure how to do that, how to cost it, and so on. And I think that if more people get involved at the local level, then it will grow. But what they need to know is they need to know the facts. They need to know what's going on. They need to have some potential solutions, and they need to not recreate the wheel. A lot of these organizations are trying to recreate the wheel, and they don't have to. There are good examples out there of successes. For example, Loretta Lynch, and she's the president, the former president of the PUC. She told the LA Times that public power is generally cheaper, safer, cleaner. And she was talking about Winter Park in Florida, the Omaha Public Utility District, the Silicon Valley Power District, as examples of districts we can look to find out how we can apply their successes at the local level where we live. So I'm thinking that that might be a possibility.
And there's other countries around the world, of course, that deal with these situations entirely differently. You know, so again, talking about not reinventing the wheel, not only can we look, of course, you mentioned a couple places much closer here, of course, at least in Northern California, Silicon Valley Power. But around the country, there are other models. Around the world, there are other models. You know, Costa Rica, for example, I realize it's much smaller, but, you know, they went several months on renewables for the whole country. I mean, so we really have to not just be thinking big, but acting in big ways. I think that you mentioned that earlier, Tim Ogburn, right? That we're not acting.
Yeah. When this issue with PG&E begins to hurt people on an individual, personal level, then you're going to see them getting involved. And that's beginning to happen.
Yeah, the fires have been so widespread and the numbers are so large. When the fires came here a couple years ago, they ripped right through Santa Rosa, ripped right through Fountain Grove, ripped right through the wealthy neighborhoods.
But it's not just the fires, though. There are companies, there are small companies that are going, businesses that are going out of business because of the shutdowns. Insurance rates up here in Nevada County, in some cases, have tripled. Property values have stagnated. It's beginning to affect people on a personal level. Personally, for me, as I'm out talking to people in the community and such, a lot of people are talking about this, and they're asking, what do we do? Like I said just a few minutes ago, again, if we can start and organize locally and not recreate the wheel, and then at the local level, if we can then connect with other local groups that are trying to do the same thing, we can become very, very powerful.
And we don't want to wait 10 years, as PG&E says. We're going to have blackouts for the next 10 years till they get their lines safe. Their lines need to be made safe now. And that includes putting lines underground in many cases and or trimming millions of trees that are around these lines as they, that's what causes the limbs fall and they cause a fire on average daily. We're in danger constantly from fire, and it's time that this gets reversed. And we can reverse it. It has to be public. It has to be democratically controlled. And we can take over PG&E, literally liquidate the board and their assets, and take it over by the state of California.
Right. Well, you and Tim Ogburn conclude that. You say at the end here, you know, you say we need to liquidate PG&E for the criminal damages it has inflicted on California. Taking a stand for a publicly owned California gas and electric company is an immediate way to reverse and transfer of wealth and provide Californians with safe, low-cost, more renewable energy. You both end the piece with all power to the people. Puns intended.
Yeah, no pun intended.
And this is right, though. All power to the people. I mean, and in this case, it's truer than ever that this is clearly the result of gross mismanagement of a monopoly power.
It's absolutely clear to us. As we looked at this, we looked at the history. PG&E, as a private company, have been around since 1850. But they gradually bought up many of what were public utilities over the years throughout California. There was a few that stood up that wouldn't let them do that. Sacramento was one. Lodi
right.
was another. We're both from Lodi, and that Lodi has a public power company. Most
right.
areas, it's all private now.
Lodi is a good example as well. There are a number of, there are a number of communities who maintain their utilities, and they're doing very well by comparison in terms of they're reinvesting their profits into renewables. Their rates are lower. For example, like I said before, PG&E's rate is 30% less. Their electric rate, is 30% more than SMUD in Sacramento.
I mean, that's significant.
And that's, Sacramento did not allow themselves to be bought by PG&E. And that's another example.
And they made the mistake of putting it in a nuclear power plant, but then they decided that that wasn't going to work, it wasn't safe, and so they shut it down. One of the few in the country.
Even the cost of deregulating that, their rates are still 30% less than PG&E's.
That's riveting because it costs a lot to decommission.
It does.
Again, we're speaking with Peter Phillips and Tim Ogburn. They're authors of a recent study, PG&E, Monopoly Controlled by the 1%, a Perfect Storm of Environmental Destruction and the Transfer of Public Wealth from California's 99% to the Global Rich. You actually also cited another article. It's got some national attention, of course. Not a lot in the corporate media, but The Nation magazine had a piece last fall. Ben Ehrenreich, who said PG&E has put profits over public safety for too long. The company belongs in the hand of the people, right? So there's Ehrenreich writing The Nation, echoing what you are saying here in your study. And of course, importantly, I believe, historically, Ehrenreich pointed out PG&E came to the attention of the rest of the country thanks to a legal clerk named Aaron Brockovich, right? That name rings a bell, who filed a class action lawsuit against PG&E for having dumped hundreds of millions of gallons of carcinogenic wastewater in Hinckley, California. PG&E managed to bless, you and Peter right here, quoting Ben Ehrenreich, PG&E managed to bless its shareholders with a staggering $4.5 billion in dividends, nonetheless. So PG&E's been at this game for a long time, right, Tim Ogburn?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
I think that you and Peter Phillips made it pretty clear in the article that we can't afford to let this game continue any longer in California. And as climate change continues and the economy becomes less and less equal and capital concentrated in the upper tiers, these kinds of problems are going to fall upon many in our society. Tim?
We can't afford this, Mickey, on so many levels. It's not just simply whether or not you have your electricity. We're talking about people dying, whole communities being lost. We're talking about opportunity loss for building businesses based on renewables. There's so many reasons why we need to fix this.
I couldn't agree more, Tim Ogburn. Peter Phillips, last words on today's program.
Well, power to the people is exactly what we were trying to say. I mean, that goes back to the 60s, but that is what has to happen here, and we're quite emphatic about it. That's why this article is on projectcensored.org, and people can look at it and really get a full understanding of who these power players were dealing with and why they're the global elite, and we got to say no to them. It's a perfect opportunity.
Well, absolutely. This study is on projectcensored.org because you're not going to see this on CNN. I wish Tim Ogburn, you and Peter Phillips were finishing this interview and off to the New York Times and the Washington Posts and all the rest. But sadly, I don't think that that's going to be in the future on your schedule anytime soon. But you can read about it at projectcensored.org on PG&E. There's a wonderful op-ed that they wrote. Peter Phillips and Tim Ogburn, guests today. Special thanks to you. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Tim, not only for the important work that you did on this study and the op-ed, but thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day to share this information with people and help them really learn how they can possibly be part of the solution, even if they don't live in California. Peter and Tim, thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mickey.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why
you've been listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. Peter Phillips and I founded this program back in 2010. We're on close to 50 stations around the United States now. Our senior producer is Anthony Fest. Our associate producer is Dennis Murphy. My co-host is Chase Palmieri. And I'd like to, of course, thank all of you for tuning in on all of our affiliates around the country. If you're interested in learning more about the Project Censored Show or what we do, please go online to projectcensored.org. You can also please follow us and like us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and so forth. We do have a presence there. And also, again, all of our archives going back to the beginning of the show are at projectcensored.org. You can also find them on the station from which we originate at kpfa.org. Thanks to all the great people at the Petaluma Community Access, which is one of our home away from homes, where we do a lot of this recording. So again, thanks to you all for tuning in, and we will see you next time. Capacity citizens, hypnotized by the master thief, combine and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love, we flip the brothers in our